Please take a seat. There's only one request, because everything is being taped. Okay, so when people ask questions, maybe we're not able to tape the question. So if you can just repeat the question and answer it. And so for those who are listening to the tape, he'll be taped. So it will make a lot more sense.
Okay. All right. Thanks again. For those of you sitting towards the back, if you'd like to move up, I'm hoping that this time will be more for question and answer as opposed to just a direct talking about or lecturing. I hope that wasn't lecturing before. But if you could come up and have any questions, that would be great. I'll start off by introducing. Here I have on my left Harry Lewis and Charles Lewis. Harry worked for the government in computers as his career, and Charles was a missionary to Indonesia, specifically to the Muslim peoples in Indonesia for many years as well. So I'll go ahead and just ask a couple of general questions, and then again, you guys, please feel free to ask anything that you feel is appropriate. So first of all, would you like to, start off with any experiences or memories that were particularly stuck out to you as you prepared for this talk? I know you have many.
Well, I have a lot of memories of as a young child in Chundafu. I can remember Dr. Henke and my dad. I don't know if another doctor went with or another missionary went, but they had shotguns, and they'd go out duck hunting. And then my first experience eating duck was not a good one. But they did things like that because that's what they did at home. And I guess there was no reaction. It was no problem. I also remember we as a family would go out into the farmland, not to the village, but out into the farmland where it was just open fields. And I can still picture us having a picnic. I don't know if he would remember because he was too young. But we would have a picnic. We'd lay a blanket out, and we would take our sandwiches and just a typical picnic. But within minutes, there would be ring of people standing over us, right at our shoulders, looking at everything we did. And I remember it made my mother rather nervous, and she acted a little silly sometimes. I don't know, didn't ask the people to leave, but they were just very open and curious because they hadn't seen white people, little children with blonde hair, and we could hear some of the comments that they were making. They were very free to comment about the size of our nose and things like that. So I remember things like that. I'm just giving you some impressions of things I remember. It's not giving a definitive experience of our whole time there. But in my younger age, we were living away from Beijing, and it was very different. I can remember going into the markets and seeing cages with the dogs in them, and I wondered what that was for. They were to be eaten. And we had a pet, by the way. We did usually have a small cocker spaniel of some sort. And there was always that debate about we're giving our dog food that the people outside who are starving to death don't have. And it was a dilemma. My folks talked about it from time to time. But we did have, they were trying to raise us in an environment where we had some connection with the way we would be living had we stayed in the United States, I think. So that's why we had picnics and the men went hunting. And when we lived in Beta Hua, the men would go out. They had these boats that, I don't know what you call it, but the man in the back goes like this, sculling it, I guess. And the water would be rough, but I can remember going out a couple of times with the older men fishing. And it was quite an experience out in the open ocean in these little junks, as I guess we call them. And it would be wet. I can just visualize going out there and going fishing. I must have been 1936. I must have been 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. Now I had rheumatic fever and I had tuberculosis. That was something else. We started in the South, and we lived in a missionary home, as you described. And I came down with rheumatic fever, and I came down with tuberculosis, and I was basically tied down for 3 years, from about the age of 3 or 4. Yeah, physically tied down. I couldn't get out of bed, and when we went to the beach in Beta Hua, they would put stakes in the ground and have a strap, a little harness for me. I couldn't exercise. I had to stay pretty calm. But at the end of, I don't remember what year, we swapped, and my folks and our family moved to Beijing, actually moved to Shundufu, and what's their names? Another doctor and his family moved from Beijing down to the southern China, and his kids got rheumatic fever then, too. Mm-hmm. So they felt like it was in the house.
Right.
But, I was immobile most of the time, but I guess I was a little older when my memory of going fishing, because it wasn't when I was tied down, obviously.
Mm-hmm. A general question for both of you. You've already mentioned, you know, what it was like in a way to grow up surrounded by Chinese people, and I was wondering what, in general, in your experiences, what were your parents' attitudes towards the Chinese people during their time in China? Like, do you remember their general statements, or how did they interact with their coworkers and the people that they ministered to in China?
Well, I think I was being in Shundufu, not in the big city of Beijing, which was a much of greater American community. I remember as a little kid, I had a Chinese friend who came and stayed overnight with me, and he taught me Chinese Pig Latin, which I don't remember today. But it was a way of communicating that, you know what Pig Latin is, where you change the first letter and put it at the end of the word and so on. And kids develop that code, and they can speak in this hidden language that supposedly nobody else knows. And I remember doing that. I don't know what the Chinese Pig Latin was, but that's what they called it. And I remember having this little boy stay overnight with me, and we talked in this Chinese Pig Latin. And so I had friends that were very close, and our folks worked in the church and had very close friends. And I know they always spoke fondly of their teacher. They always had one teacher most of the time, and every week they would have a language lesson. And they gave sort of funny names to some of these teachers because they had some quirks and were humorous personalities. And in fact, some of them were in the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tiger,
yep.
And some of those others. So they had very warm, and mother had very good friends in the church. She was involved in the music program, had choir. And as you indicated, it translated the Messiah into Chinese. I don't know if it was Christmas or Easter, because it covers both.
Right.
I'll interrupt.
Yeah,
I don't remember anything during that period. Most of my memory is the folks and their love for the Chinese under the People's Republic of China when we were under Mao Zedong. I was going to mention it in my notes, but right now, when Dad was invited in 1970-something to go back for the centennial of the hospital, he told us, he said, my memories of the suffering of the people are so close to my heart that I really don't want to go back. So he did not go back.
And they also said that they didn't think they had the strength at their age.
Well, what hit me was that his memories of the Christians suffering was so horrendous that he just didn't want to have to recall those things.
And then the other thing I was mentioning was that he said was that they had so many friends and so many very close people that he not only worked with but knew in various capacities. They would be wined and dined and had to be entertained, but welcomed to the point that they wouldn't have the energy to be able to hold up. It would just be too tiring.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, there was somebody else. Oh, Dr. Gao.
Yeah, Lucy Gow. Lucy, I thought of Lucy.
She's like
Gow.
An aunt to us, and she was a nurse, a doctor.
Doctor.
At, there at the hospital in Daoji Yuan in Beijing.
So you've now brought up the subject of Daoji Yuan. So Dr. Lewis worked at Dao Hospital or Daoji Yuan in Beijing after the war. And I was wondering, Harry, and you were with him when he went to Baodingfu to continue his medical work there in the face of the communist advance.
Well, the doctors took a month at a time, get down from Beijing, and that one doctor would take that month to be the doctor at Baodingfu.
Right. And they could fly to the town, right?
Well, when I went by truck. When I came back, I had to come by plane because the train line had been broken. The communists were fighting. I remember bullets. We weren't supposed to stay close to anywhere near a window at night because bullets would be flying. And a good part of the day, my dad would be patching up the nationalist soldiers that had been injured in the fighting around there.
Mm-hmm. And just to give context, Dr. Lewis went to Baoding in 1948, and Harry went with him. So these are the experiences.
For one month that during the summer when I had no school. Yeah.
Right.
And then I had nothing to do for that whole month but go through things in the different homes because the compound where all the missionaries had lived, nobody was there anymore. Just the doctor came down and he'd work in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I got to see some of his operations and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then when I left, that was exciting, I think, more for my dad than me. I got on this DC-3, and it was the last plane out of Baodingfu. And everybody wanted on, and they finally had to stop the people trying to get on. And my dad says, I wasn't aware of it, but my dad said it was just that much over the wall at the edge of the airport. Mm-hmm. He was not sure if we were going to make it or not. And I think when he got out later, he must have found a way of getting on a truck, and they went through the lines.
Mm-hmm. And this is the evacuation of Baoding in 1948.
Yeah.
Since we're already in the subject of the post-war period, I was wondering if, Charles, you could share a bit more about your time in Beijing between 1949 and 1952. And, of course, we can take questions about any of these time periods afterward. But if you could speak to your interactions, your family's interactions with the new government in 1949 and the Chinese Christians.
My memory is pretty clear on arriving in the railroad station in the southern part of Beijing, and it was October 1st, 1949, we arrived. Oh, I have it in my notes here. Dr. Hanke had telegrammed my folks in Hong Kong who were preparing to go to India, saying, everything's fine, the communists have come in, we can work with the Chinese, everything is fine, please come back and join me. And our two ships passed in the night. He left Beijing, and Dad had to go back to Beijing.
He was alone.
He was alone. Okay. So anyway, Dr. Hanke got my father to come up to Beijing. And we had to ride a number of pedicabs because it wasn't safe for us Americans to go into the city during all the parades and celebration and the anti-American fervor that was. So that was left an impression on me. We took about four pedicabs with all our luggage and my two sisters and I. Harry went on to college, so he wasn't with us. I don't have the dates correct, but within 4 months, the labor union notified my dad that he was not welcome to work anymore with the people of the People's Republic of China. So for a number of weeks, if not months, he was without work, and he went through considerable emotional stress. Of course, immediately he started processing an exit permit for our family. And the authorities said, well, we'll let Mrs. Lewis and the children go, And mother said, I was separated from my husband for 2 years during the Second World War. I'm not going to leave unless we leave all together. So it was 2 years later that we finally got an exit permit. They showed all kinds of indications that Dad was a plum target during the Korean War, and they were suspicious, or they tried to find a way of accusing him of being a CIA agent. Talking about hunting, I discovered the shotgun up in the attic of the fifth house where the Hankies had lived. And I and my German boyfriend, we broke open the shells and played around with the gunpowder. And finally, Dad discovered what we were doing, and he took the shotgun, very expensive, ornate shotgun, to the police to report it and register it. And the police told him to keep it safe, but they didn't confiscate it. So for us Westerners, and I especially as a Sulianhaize, a Russian kid, I mean, there were no Americans there. It was just a delight. I had so many hobbies. I went to all the different market days. I had pigeons. You saw the pigeon whistles outside. You can look at those. My German boyfriend and I had bicycles, and we went camping way out in the north near the summer palace. I did get into trouble, but then the soldier or the police would say, well, he's a Sulianhaize, and let me go. So I was a teenager and having a good time. But my parents were under a lot of pressure with the Korean War going on and a lot of anti-American sentiment. I remember pictures in the newspaper of germ warfare, accusing America of germ warfare, with people in their masks, with their masks and chopsticks going out into the ocean and picking up germs. You know, the propaganda machine was really something. And so mother and dad were constantly concerned about our safety, or especially dad's safety.
Now, my memory of what I've been told was that very shortly after dad couldn't work in the hospital, every month he would go down and apply for an exit permit.
Yeah.
And he was turned down. For 19, well, part of that time, after several months, they said, well, your wife and kids can go, but you've got to stay. And mother refused to do that. And then on the 19th month, they went down and they were told, be out in 24 hours.
Yeah, and that was interesting. Mother's cello was left behind, and a Christian took it and got on the train and came down to Tientsin and returned the cello before mother got on the USS Cavalier, which was a... No, we first went down to on an LSD, and my mother was up on the fourth bunk, and my sisters were there, and she had a dream, and she leapt off the bunk and hit her head, her cheek. But anyway, we then went down to Tientsin and then got on the USS Cavalier, a troop transport ship, to Shanghai. But that was not during the communists. That was first, yeah.
Can I mention her cello? One of the interesting stories that I've known for a long time was that as we traveled in China to and from, she always carried her cello, and my dad carried one of the kids, the youngest kids, and I think I was taking Charles or somebody. But the Chinese people thought that mother was carrying a dead baby because it looked like a coffin.
Yeah.
Yes. They didn't realize a musical instrument.
So my experience, Dad... They discovered in Beijing, this was the legations, all the embassies, they discovered there was an American doctor in town. And so he got proposed that he serve the different legations, French, English, Dutch, even the Russians wanted an American doctor. And so the hospital allowed my dad to have a chauffeured jeep to go and serve the different embassies and legations. And they loved that. And I just want to say that was a big plus, because many of those were also musicians. And I still remember mother having these, what do you call them, where you have all quartets. The quartets, violin.
String quartets.
Yeah,
string
it was really teams. Wonderful. And, of course, we had the perks of being invited to Christmas parties in the British legation. And the Dutch especially had two sons and one huge room with electric trains. And my folks were able to play tennis with the Dutch legation and his wife. We were taken out to summer bungalows and allowed to stay in these nice places out in the countryside. Mm. Yeah.
So one question I have for both of you, this is, again, a general question. We've kind of gone through the time period here, but what was it like attending church in China as young missionary children?
I want to say, first of all, I spoke fluent street language. What do you call that? Putonghua?
Yeah.
I didn't understand any of the hymns or the sermons or anything. It was a high intellectual language that I never learned. But when we came back under the communists, mother did lead a Handel's Messiah presentation for Christmas. And the communist cadre asked for 10 minutes each service. And then a month later, it was 15 minutes. And finally, they took over the whole hour of worship. And I would say within a year, that church sanctuary, not the size of this, but anyway, it was used for goats, keeping livestock. My parents took me to Wong Ming Dao's house church. You've heard of that name, yeah. During that time, it was very exciting because a tent was put over the big yard, and the secret police who were there spying on Wong Ming Dao, they would come to repentance and accept the gospel. His preaching was powerful. I didn't understand a word of it, but it was quite an impressive experience for me. Like Dad said, the loss of some of his close friends because of communist policy, these Christians were reactionaries and either taken to re-education, or as we experienced right in the compound there, we could see a group of reactionaries being marched out the northern gate. And then we heard the shots of the rifles, and then we saw the bodies being carted back into the city. I was too young to really understand the pressure that mother and dad felt because of the Chinese really being persecuted or treated so brutally. Granted, there was David Adney. Have you heard of him? David Adney, CIM. He got university students together. And I remember their meeting in the, what do we call the church? The international church. Yeah, that was continuing. But David Adney would have these university students come and train them for living under communist rule. And I'm quite impressed. I just remember that. He was training students for living under that.
Thanks, Charles. How about Harry?
I don't really remember. We had an international church on Sunday afternoon, so English speaking. and missionaries and private citizens and business people would come. I know I went a few times to church with my parents in the morning. It was a Chinese church. But I wasn't participating. I can't even remember a sermon being preached. My parents, more often than with us, I take that back. As a high school student in Beijing, we did go some in the morning, and I remember wanting to be excused because I figured I'll be going this in the afternoon anyway.
And the men sang.
I'll say I don't have much memory of it.
But the men would sing in falsetto. I remember that.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And prayers were all prayed together. And, of course, there are a few men or women that wanted to pray louder, and I still remember that.
It's corporate prayer.
Yeah, corporate prayer, and I remember that. Yeah.
I can remember one experience where Dad told me afterwards that during a time, it's a small church, and they were sharing, the men, I guess, were sharing what they were thankful for, and Dad was thankful for his wife and the support that she had given him. And afterwards, one of the elders took him aside and said, "You don't do that in church. You don't praise your wife."
So this is, again, an example of Chinese culture.
Right.
Not exactly being compatible with. So we have about 20 minutes left. And
I'm not done yet.
Oh.
I'm not done
yet. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll let Charles finish.
And then I have a
okay. I was hoping to open up questions. But
with the freedom I had as a teenager, I collected stamps. I have had a collection from 1938, and the post office would send me a notice every time there was a new set of stamps. So I was doing that. I had my pigeons that I took care of and enjoyed. We would swim at the International Club, and it was open all summer. Wendy and I went down on our bicycles, and it was September 29th. And I hadn't seen my German boyfriend, Klaus Gentner, and Maria, his sister, all summer long. So I decided I would go down his Hutung and let my sister go on home. And it was a dragnet. The police met me at the gate. And they said, "Come on in, come on in." And Klaus was standing on his porch saying, "Don't come in." He was crying, "Don't come in." But it was a dragnet where the police had accused Mr. Gentner of CIA espionage. He was an export-import man. And so the dragnet brought in all kinds of people who were never released up to the point, almost 2 years. And Mr. Gentner was sentenced to prison for 14 years. My folks wondered why I hadn't come home. And so they phoned Klaus's house, and a man answered and said, "No, your son's not here." In Chinese, spoke in Chinese, they're not here, he's not here. So by sunset, my folks had finally figured out that I was caught in that house. And so Dad got a bicycle and rode down that Hutung, and they were very happy to welcome him. The police thought they had gotten a prime plum. But anyway, that was the night before the October 1st celebration. And I had been interrogated all day long. I was put into a little room by myself. I was fed, but I was terrorized by the interrogation. But when Dad came, he reasoned with them that he was the only doctor on duty for the next day, for October 1st. All the staff, with a few nurses remaining, he would be the only doctor in the hospital. So at midnight, he convinced them that he was telling the truth. And he and I went out and bought a little candle lights for our bicycles and rode home.
I have a question. I thought Dad didn't practice in the hospital.
He was the He was the doctor for the Westerners, but for that particular occasion, he was the only doctor on duty.
And that reminds me, talking about Dad and his pictures and the subjects of his pictures. Dad had a very special personality. He was warm to everybody, friendly, outgoing, Tom knows. And I'm sure it was just his personality that he was so real that people felt comfortable with him.
And it comes through in the photos.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there time for one little negative input?
Sure.
You know, Dad encouraged me in my college days. He said, and I was wanting to be a missionary, and I wanted to go to the Muslim field. But he made this comment. He says, you know, you'd be wise if you finish college and you go on and take theological education and get ordained. Because during his days in China, it was the ordained missionaries who had the clout. Even though he had seniority, the politics of the church and the mission board was that a medical doctor doesn't have a degree from Princeton Seminary. So the ordained missionaries were the ones that were really making policies. And he was sort of concerned that I should get an ordained position before I go overseas, which I did. Yes.
So the, again,
okay, that's off the track, yeah.
So I have to repeat for the recording that the question is about, Charles, your own experience in being a missionary to the Muslims. How was that? And
I'll cut it short. I was ordained. I went to Indonesia as an ordained Presbyterian, and they welcomed me and put me in charge as a Presbyterian or a Reformed pastor and a teacher and a lecturer in seminaries. But I wasn't reaching the Muslims. I was just involved with Christians. And so I finally took citizenship and I became a businessman. And for the next 25 years, I've been serving, working among Muslims 24/7, living with Muslims as a businessman.
And being a citizen of Indonesia, the denomination, the Reformed Church, had no say in what he did. He was free then to live among the Muslims, work with the Muslims.
Yeah.
The Christians were afraid of him being out there because it would disturb the relationship between the Muslims and the Christians. So yeah. He just got citizenship and was free then to
yeah.
do his work.
I took citizenship 20 years ago.
It took you seven years.
Yeah. And I, my wife and I were business people. We taught English. I had a tourism business. I would bring Western bikers to do bike tours through the highlands of Sumatra.
Bicycles,
not motorcycles. But that way we planted seeds in areas of Sumatra that had never heard the gospel. Yeah.
Thanks. Do want to open the floor for other general questions about Lewis's time in China, specifically with Harry and Charles, their youth in China as well. So please feel free to ask.
I want to just add that Dad and Mother's heart for the people of China, that they understand that Jesus came for every Chinese. He died on the cross so that our sins are forgiven, washed away. This was one of Dad's main struggles with the Presbyterian Mission Board, is that they thought this whole gospel thing was a joke. Can you believe that? Yeah.
Be careful, because the more
I know this is being recorded, but the thing is that Dad found that coming home on furlough, then many of the churches where he would speak and talk about their work, the people had already made up their minds that preaching the gospel isn't the important thing. It's social gospel that's important. And so that was one of Dad's sad...
Make a difference. So yeah. Back in the 30s and the 40s, that was not true. And back in the 30s and 40s, before the Second World War, the Presbyterian denomination, the missionaries went back to the denomination and made policy. Then after the war, it all was top down.
Yeah.
The headquarters told the missionaries what to do and how to do it, and the local missionaries lost all the control.
Yeah, even in Thailand.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I make two little quick impressions that I thought might be interesting? For one thing, in China, we drank goat's milk. They didn't have milk cows. And every time we moved to China after a furlough, I had to get used to goat's milk. And then I come back to the States, and I had to get used to cow's milk. And it's funny how it didn't taste good, but after a while, you get used to it. And the other thing is, as a kid in Shunafu, I remember my dad coming home that day and telling me that, well, there was a little boy that came into the hospital. He and his friends were playing with a hand grenade. And one of them was holding it when it exploded, and it damaged his leg. And I can still remember Dad saying his hand, that was it. His hand was damaged, the skin was all burned off, and they cut a pocket in his leg, a skin, very carefully cut the skin loose, and he had to go for several weeks with his hand in that pocket, and the skin of his leg grew over his hand. So it was things like that that I heard a lot about, little surgeries and people being injured and things like that. Mm-hmm.
And again, in China, the missionaries saw many diseases that were not seen at all in the United States. So a lot of their medical training was put to the test in many cases. Skin grafting, opium addiction, strange tumors. There are a lot of photographs I did not show today of different diseases that were encountered by the medical missionaries, and that was very difficult for them.
Dad ultimately became a specialist in tropical medicine.
And don't forget, demon possession was very obvious in China. And my folks, my dad particularly, I still remember, he was very tender towards these people that were disturbed and demon possessed. But deliverance ministry was not part of his training.
But he observed.
Yeah. He loved them, but he didn't have this training or understanding that we, in the name of Jesus Christ, we can cast out the demons. And we find that possible among the Muslims. Yeah.
Other questions? Yes. The question is, did you eat American food or Chinese food when you were young?
We had both. New Year's, I loved the jiaozi's that were made at the hospital.
But the goats were providing milk for the hospital.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
For the, what do you call it, the children, the babies. What do they call that?
The natal.
So I even got involved with the goat herd in Beijing. I had my own goat, and I helped milk the goats for the hospital.
But the food we ate, we had every family had a cook and a houseboy kind of did a lot of the cleaning up and things. And the cook had learned to cook American Western food. But we had at least once a day a Chinese, usually lunch. We'd have a Chinese lunch. And we had jiaozi's, and we had all the different Chinese food. We loved it.
Get up early in the morning and go down the hutong to get the soya milk.
Doujiang.
Yeah, and the different pastries that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Other questions? I have a few more, but I really do want to, I mean, this is the time now to ask anything you'd like.
The OMF was the mission board that my wife and I joined, and they were quite curious why I didn't want to work with Chinese, because I spoke Mandarin, and you know, they thought that would be a natural in Indonesia. But they got over it. My calling was really to the Javanese and the Muslims of Indonesia.
And this actually was one of my questions, was how did your experiences in China affect your faith later on in life? And Charles, you've spoken to this. I'm curious about Harry.
Well, I think one thing, as a kid, we went through as a family some tense times, nothing like when Charles and the family was under the communists, but there were times that there was shootings and various things, and we woke up in Beijing. We used to wake up in the morning, you'd see some people that had frozen to death out on the streets and so on, beggars everywhere. But somehow my parents gave me a strong faith that God's in control. And it's partly maybe my personality, but I'm not a person that worries or is fearful. And I think it's the faith that the parents taught me from small child, that God loves us, and we're in His hands, and we don't have to fear. And I know a few times in high school, we got into some trouble and did some things in Shanghai, and it always works out. And again, I just trusted that God would go before and take care of us. I think that's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm.
And again, I just say their evangelistic zeal spilled over to me. And Harry, by the way, he's the anchor that kept us on the field. Because over there we would come across, well, I was kicked out of Indonesia for political reasons, and I was able to phone Harry, and Harry, would you get me a car for, you know, computers? I started out with one of the first...
Capro.
No, it wasn't Capro, it was
Osborne.
But anyway, Harry was sort of the home base for us. And very encouraging that we keep faithful serving overseas, even though he's not able.
Our two sisters, the older sister married an engineer, and they went to Pakistan. They were there for 10 years. And the younger sister married, I don't know what denomination, but they were in Japan. And then
it was navigators. Navigator. He was a navigator missionary.
He went to Costa Rica. So they all were missionaries but me. I stayed home and taught school and worked with computers and took care of their business.
Yeah,
the world
a lot of our business.
One other thing I was just going to mention. Does anybody know the name John and Betty Stamm? They were missionaries in China in the early 30s, and just before we went over in 33, and they were martyred. They were by bandits. I don't know if they were. I think they were communist bandits out in the countryside, and they were stripped and marched through the streets and then beheaded. And I remember early on knowing about them. And in fact, when I was in high school in Beijing, in Shanghai,
their daughter
who had been rescued by an ama and carried hundreds of miles out to the coast to rescue their little child, she was in high school with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, living with the Merwins. She was living with the Merwins.
Okay. Questions?
Oh, I was just going to ask. All right. Well, I want to get together to thank Harry and Charles for sharing today. So I hope you'll join me in doing that. And we have more time after to talk. Thank you so much.
It was fun for us.
Thank you. I think I'll just make a couple last.